Seth Godin's manifesto begins with a simple yet profound story. Annie Downs at the Mocha Club transformed her life with just two sentences. "I've got an idea, and I'm gonna start working on it tomorrow." The power wasn't in her specific idea, but in her posture. She took initiative rather than waiting for instructions. This small moment captures the essence of what has made this book a favorite among entrepreneurs like Tim Ferriss and Reid Hoffman. Since its publication, Poke the Box has sold over 1 million copies and sparked a movement of starters across industries. Its message resonates particularly in Silicon Valley, where the mantra, "Done is better than perfect," has become gospel. In a world obsessed with optimization, Godin reminds us that nothing can be optimized until someone first has the courage to begin. We're taught six imperatives throughout our lives: awareness, education, connection, consistency, building assets, and productivity. Schools drill these into us. Companies reward them. But there's a seventh imperative that's rarely taught yet most crucial: having the guts, heart, and passion to ship. Without initiative, you're simply reacting to the world, adrift and waiting to be shoved. This missing imperative is what separates dreamers from doers, planners from performers. This missing element explains why so many brilliant people never achieve their potential. They possess knowledge but lack the spark that transforms ideas into reality. Consider Craig Venter's work in synthetic biology. Even with perfect genetic code designed on computers, his creations need that spark of life, something living, to transform them from inert mass to living organism. Similarly, look at Thomas Edison's journey to the light bulb. It wasn't just about knowledge, but about the relentless drive to try thousands of materials until finding success. That's your opportunity, to provide the initiative that brings platforms, opportunities, and organizations to life. Think of life as a buzzer box. My MIT-educated uncle built a contraption with switches and lights for my newborn cousin. While adults might find it terrifying, a child sees it and starts poking. If I do this, that happens. The child learns through experimentation, not instruction. Our economy now demands this same exploratory mindset. Yet our educational and corporate systems have spent decades training it out of us. Consider how children naturally learn to walk, not through instruction manuals or lectures, but through countless attempts, falls, and recoveries. This natural learning process embodies the seventh imperative. The elements economists understand: ideas, people, place, raw materials, distribution, money, marketing, are all wasted without the least understood element, someone to say go. All other elements are cheaper and easier to find than ever before, making the motive force critical. Everything is waiting for someone to say go. Look at successful startups like Airbnb or Uber. Their core technologies existed before them. What made them successful wasn't just the idea or resources, but the initiative to execute and persist through challenges. This seventh imperative manifests in various ways: the courage to launch before feeling completely ready, the resilience to continue despite setbacks, and the wisdom to learn from failure rather than fear it. Companies like Amazon and Google succeeded not just because of brilliant ideas or abundant resources, but because their leaders consistently took action, made decisions, and pushed forward even when the path wasn't clear. The modern economy increasingly rewards this kind of initiative taking. While knowledge workers are valuable, action takers who can navigate uncertainty and drive projects forward are becoming invaluable. In a world where information is abundant and easily accessible, the ability to act decisively and consistently becomes the key differentiator between success and mere potential. Great programmers learn by poking the box, coding something, seeing what happens, changing it, and repeating until they understand how it works. The box might be a computer, market, customer, or boss. Through poking, you gain understanding and ownership. A programmer might experiment with different algorithms, test various user interfaces, or try multiple approaches to solve a problem. This iterative process of trial and error leads to deep understanding that can't be achieved through passive learning alone. This approach applies far beyond programming. When people witness magic tricks, their natural response is, "How did you do that?" But some have been so indoctrinated by their jobs that they don't question how things work. They accept that perhaps nature's laws don't apply. A factory worker might use the same inefficient process for years without questioning it. A sales representative might follow an outdated script without exploring better approaches. Initiative requires curiosity, not just searching for the right answer, but an insatiable desire to understand how something works and improve it. The difference between curious people and initiators? Creative people are satisfied once they see how it's done. Initiators won't rest until they do it themselves. For example, a curious person might watch YouTube videos about starting a business while an initiator actually launches one. A curious employee might admire an efficient workflow while an initiator implements and refines it. You don't need to be a famous entrepreneur to be an initiator. People within organizations are perfectly situated to start something. Customer service reps, receptionists, assistant foremen. Help someone struggling with a tray. Try a better way to answer angry customer calls. Fix that noisy hinge. A receptionist might create a better visitor check-in system. A warehouse worker might reorganize inventory for easier access. A customer service rep might develop new templates for common responses. These small initiatives compound to create significant improvements. It's obvious, so why doesn't everyone do it? The answer lies in our relationship with flux and risk. Flux is flow, the movement of things, while risk involves potential winning or losing. People often confuse the two, fearing flux because they associate it with risk and risk with failure. An employee might avoid suggesting process improvements for fear of criticism. A manager might stick with outdated systems rather than face the uncertainty of change. This confusion leads many to avoid movement entirely, becoming stuck defending their status quo. But in today's world where everything is in flux, standing still is actually moving backward. Companies that don't innovate get left behind. Skills that aren't updated become obsolete. The irony is that like a log floating downstream experiences less turbulence than a rock, embracing flux often creates less chaos than resisting it. Those who adapt and flow with change typically fare better than those who rigidly resist it. Our fear of uncertainty and shipping meaningful work is hardwired into our prehistoric lizard brain, the same primitive neural structure that exists in deer and lizards, focused purely on survival and threat detection. This ancient part of our brain is constantly scanning for danger, making us hesitate before taking risks or exposing ourselves to judgment. Stephen Pressfield calls this internal resistance the resistance, a relentless inner voice that urges compromise, suggests safer paths, and systematically sabotages our boldest opportunities. By recognizing and naming this resistance, we can begin to understand its patterns. Like dealing with a difficult but familiar friend, naming and acknowledging this force helps us recognize when it's acting up and allows us to move forward despite its protests. But our natural resistance is dramatically amplified by modern social conditioning and cultural narratives. Society has developed a perverse fascination with failure, often spending more energy dissecting defeats than celebrating victories. Media coverage amplifies spectacular failures while treating success with skepticism. Yet examining the trajectories of highly successful individuals reveals a different story. Oprah was fired from her first television job. Mark Cuban failed at numerous ventures before his breakthrough, and Dr. Mehmet Oz faced significant setbacks in his early career. These leaders share a common thread. Their failures were stepping stones, not endpoints. The more action you take, the more failure you'll encounter. But these aren't failures born of carelessness or cutting corners. They're the natural consequences of pushing boundaries, testing new ideas, and genuinely attempting to create positive change. The institutional resistance to initiative has deep historical roots. Traditional factories, casinos, and large organizations systematically chose compliance over creativity, preferring predictable mediocrity to the uncertainties of innovation. They created elaborate systems to ensure conformity, trading the potential upside of improvement for the certainty of following established procedures. The consequences of this approach are now glaringly apparent. Organizations find themselves paralyzed, unable to adapt to changing markets or implement meaningful improvements. Auto workers were discouraged from suggesting process improvements. Musicians were pushed toward formulaic compositions, and food companies prioritized consistency over quality. This led to a race to the bottom. When innovation is discouraged, products and services inevitably trend toward the lowest common denominator. The fundamental problem? Markets evolve, customers' expectations rise, and companies can't compete by becoming increasingly predictable when consumers demand something better. Our fading industrial economy has created a particularly costly misconception. Creative individuals have been conditioned to believe they must wait to be chosen by gatekeepers. Authors wait anxiously for agents and publishers to validate their work. Entrepreneurs pitch endlessly to venture capitalists, and employees wait passively for promotions. This pick-me mentality subtly acknowledges and reinforces the power of traditional systems while abdicating personal responsibility for success. If you don't get selected, you can blame the system. If you do, their choice becomes your validation. This mindset is increasingly obsolete in today's connected world. The alternative? Reject this tyranny of gatekeepers and choose yourself. Create your own opportunities, build your own platforms, and connect directly with your audience. For a long time, projects weren't central to business. Ford's Model T came off assembly lines for 19 years, selling over 15 million cars. The project of launching was necessary, but large-scale manufacturing was the business. Now consider newer organizations like Apple, Google, Pixar. These are project-centric. No projects, no organization. Coasting isn't an option because projects don't last forever. After shipping, there's no useful work until someone starts something new. Henry Ford revolutionized manufacturing by focusing on productivity, making cars efficiently to sell them cheaper. His system relied on obedience, interchangeable parts, and interchangeable people. That system has no growth left. It's moved overseas. The new system uses stable business platforms to produce things while building projects on those platforms. It doesn't consume oil or electricity on assembly lines. It thrives on innovation. Call it a project line. The old system can't work without the new, and the new depends on unpredictable human insights. Tom Peters has spent over 25 years traveling millions of miles spreading ideas from In Search of Excellence. Yet he's visibly frustrated on stage because too many still wait for him to tell them exactly what to do. They don't understand that excellence isn't about working harder to follow orders. It's taking initiative to do work you decide is worth doing. This represents a revolutionary overthrow of time motion studies, foremen, and bureaucracies. Stop waiting for maps. We reward those who draw maps, not those who follow them. Many organizations have biz dev teams responsible for new deals, partnerships, and transformative ideas. The people who find new toys for McDonald's kids' meals or new uses for shelf space at Starbucks. They have no fixed agenda. They're in charge of starting things. Most organizations need this capability, but few have it. And those that do are often terrible at it because no one on the team has the posture of initiation. The challenge of being an initiator is that you'll be wrong sometimes. You'll waste time and face blame. But this is precisely why initiative is valuable. It's scarce. Most people shy away from these challenges out of fear. Ditch digging isn't scarce, which is why it gets minimum wage. But finding smart people willing to start useful projects, knowing they won't always work, is extremely difficult. The original Starbucks didn't sell coffee. It sold beans and leaves. This wrong version would have failed without Howard Schultz's vision, but without Jerry Baldwin's flawed coffee bean store, there'd be no Frappuccino. Similarly, the original Starship Enterprise design looked like a cross between a Frisbee and a can opener before evolving into the iconic ship we know. Poking doesn't mean getting it right, it means taking action. We're constantly presented with clear answers, from Google searches, bloggers' three-paragraph solutions, books with 13 steps to success, and company policy manuals. Two forces push us toward accepting these answers: the industrial age's demand for immediate decisions and the digital age's binary thinking. But initiative isn't about either. It's about let's see and try. When there's no clear right answer, something new is often the right path. Is it okay to say this might not work? Is your work so serious that everything you do must succeed? Change is powerful, but always comes with failure as its partner. This might not work isn't merely something to tolerate, it's something you should actively seek out. At the circus, the ringmaster intoned, "They will now attempt a triple flip." The word attempt suggested something risky and interesting might not work. Only in systems where quality is a given do we care about attempts. Despite Yoda's wisdom, do or do not, there is no try. There is indeed a try, and trying is the opposite of hiding. Starting means you're gonna finish. If it doesn't ship, you failed. To merely start without finishing is just boasting or stalling. If you don't ship, you haven't started anything at all. Your work must intersect with the market and receive feedback. Otherwise, it's merely a hobby. We all have hunches and inklings, but playing with them isn't the same as poking the box. Keeping ideas inside is merely hypothetical shipping. If you don't finish, it doesn't count as starting, and if you don't start, you're not poking. In environments that value shipping, starting becomes harder because your ideas are more likely to reach the market. Some people self-censor when they realize their Wednesday ideas might reach millions by Saturday, as with SNL writers. The challenge is focusing on the work, not the fear. Paradoxically, as your shipping confidence grows, your willingness to instigate may fade as you become more aware of the consequences. Holorado, a band from small-town Ontario, spent years poking the box. When venues wouldn't book them, they'd show up claiming their gig fell through. They burned demos in Best Buy parking lots using returned equipment, sold CDs in Ziploc bags outside malls, and created a residency tour, playing 7 different cities on the same day each week for a month. They self-released their album, convinced distributors to package it in actual Ziploc bags, and sold 10,000 copies in Canada. They stretched a Chinese showcase budget into a 3-week tour, recorded a Mandarin song, and returned 6 months later. 4 years of trying new things, seeing what works, and repeating, while typical bands play coffee houses complaining about not being discovered. Shipping is an event with life before, during, and after. Starting isn't like that. It's a series of events. You decide to walk to Cleveland, taking a first step in the right direction. That's starting. You walk all day, 20 miles, and stop at a hotel. The next morning, either you quit or you start again. Every step is a new beginning. Keep starting until you finish. People without credibility rarely get the leverage to bring ideas to the world. People with credibility are so busy preserving it, they fail to bring provocative ideas forward. The greatest challenge for any successful organization is finding the courage to risk that success to accomplish something great. What a relief to Bob Dylan when he was booed at Newport Folk Festival. That's out of the way. Now let's make art. What a relief to Elizabeth Gilbert when Committed didn't sell as well as Eat, Pray, Love. Now I can write again. Identifying the sophomore slump and confronting it head-on is the best way to return to your original purpose. We hesitate because starting maximizes the chances of ending up wrong. The nightmare is vivid. The boss finds someone who did something wrong and disciplines or fires them. If you're not wrong, that won't happen. But the boss rarely hassles those who never start, who always study or criticize. The typical organization places a premium on not wrong, spending no time weeding out non-starters. In the networked economy, not starting is far worse than being wrong. If you start, you can evolve and adjust, turning wrong into right. Without starting, you never get that chance. Robert Litton of the Brookings Institution points out that almost all real job growth occurs in a company's first 5 years. Once a company hits stability, they usually replace workers rather than create new jobs. In early days, no one knows exactly what needs doing. It's not a job, but a passion, mission, and experiment. Staff is confused and cross-pollinating, trying to survive. When initiatives work, the company hires accordingly. They flounder and initiate until big enough to relax. Then they stop. Companies that grow after year 5 do so because they embrace the discipline of poking. Beyond our moral obligations to honesty and treating others with dignity, there's a moral obligation to start. If you have the platform and ability to make a difference, it transcends should and becomes must. Failing to use your opportunity to contribute steals from yourself and others. Once you've engaged with an organization, relationship, or community, you owe it to your team to initiate. Hiding your spark, burying ideas, or keeping questions to yourself hurts the team as severely as theft. To do less is to steal from them. During my brief Yahoo career, I naturally started things. 3 weeks in, I organized a cross-departmental lunch for connection and brainstorming. My boss immediately shut me down, instructing me to cool it and await instructions in my cube. If you have such a boss, either ignore this book for now or start job hunting immediately. There's a third option for the bold: ignore your boss and keep starting things. It works out in the end. Organizations that refuse to plant while they harvest may not deserve your investment of time and effort. My boss's Yahoo tenure ultimately failed, just as I failed as an employee by not seeing the world his way. But failure is rarely fatal, and the process of regularly starting is never a failure. It's now essential for success. Vince McMahon's XFL venture was a spectacular failure. From the blimp crash landing before the first game, to player injuries during the opening coin toss replacement, to the forgettable games, borderline misogynistic coverage, and NBC canceling after just one season, it failed by every measure. But so what? For all our anxiety about starting something, if this is the worst outcome, it's not so bad. Both Vince and NBC came out ahead compared to those who lacked the courage to start anything. Innovation may be mysterious and inspiration unpredictable, but the marketplace proves we can rise to the occasion. Once starting becomes ingrained, you'll notice more opportunities to initiate. Momentum builds, and you improve at generating it. Going to bed knowing people expect you to initiate things tomorrow means waking up with a list. As you create a culture of people always seeking to connect, improve, and poke, the bar rises. What might require board-level decisions at competitors gets done as a matter of course at your company. Customer issues get handled at the front line, saving time and money while generating joy. This simple act of initiating becomes profoundly transformative. Forward motion becomes a defensible business asset. Some of us hesitate when we should start, holding back for more research, better timing, or kinder audiences. This incredibly common habit, hypego, consumes our genius and prevents meaningful contribution. Surprisingly, the opposite problem exists too. Some people hide by overstating, constantly dreaming up the next big thing, only to abandon it days later for something newer. As Fitzgerald wrote of Gatsby, "What would be the use of doing great things if I could have a better time telling her what I was going to do?" This hypergo mindset provides safety through constant motion. You can't be held responsible when you're already on to the next thing. Success in jeopardy isn't just about knowledge, it's about buzzer timing. Buzz too early and Alex hasn't finished the question, too late and someone else answers. The same applies to initiating in life. We all know the obnoxious colleague who's too aggressive, but in response, most of us overreact and do too little. Starting is an artful choice, not a black-and-white process. For most people, the problem isn't buzzing too much, but buzzing too little. The solution? Buzz more. See what happens. Buzz even more. Repeat. The lesson of Icarus, don't fly too high or the gods will punish you, is burned into our psyche. In Australia, they call it the tall poppy problem. Stand out and you'll get cut down. We're trained to fit in, not stand out, and the easiest way to fit in is to never initiate. But someone is giving you permission. Someone hired, funded, trained, or encouraged you to see what needs doing and do it. It's not hubris, it's essential. Hollywood isn't safe. Flying isn't safe. Selling isn't safe. You'll face rejection. Golf isn't safe. My grandfather died playing it. Speaking up isn't safe. People might be offended. Innovation isn't safe. You'll fail, perhaps badly. Now that we've established that, what are you going to do? Hide? Crouch in a corner working to fit in? That's not safe either. Might as well do something that matters instead.